At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone. The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Now, ironically, earlier on in the show, we were talking about how to rewild Ireland and plant lots of trees. Now, with Simon Tierney, we're going to talk about the most efficient way of chopping them down. Of course, we are talking about the chainsaw, which, again, surprisingly, I would have thought 20th century invention, not so.
No, indeed. It goes back a much further way than that, Sean. Are you a chainsaw owner, a proud chainsaw owner?
I'm not, you know. I don't think I've ever used one.
I'm shocked too,
actually, come to think of it.
Yeah. I mean, you're telling me that you've never in your life owned a chainsaw?
No, I mean, obviously, I've thought about it, you know, at some future point when I do commit mass murder and pretty much everybody here is for the chop. But I haven't kind of looked into, you know, what's the best brand, what one, you know, scatters the most blood, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you got to watch Dexter for that. There is a famous episode. But like, for me, like for a lot of people, the chainsaw is kind of the ultimate symbol of virile masculinity. It's a dream of mine. I had two dreams when I was a kid. One was to own an apartment with a balcony.
Okay.
Check. Got that
Check.
One.
Woo. Boom. Yeah.
The second one is to own a chainsaw.
Now, right.
I live in an apartment.
You are familiar
floor.
With the I'm a Lumberjack sketch on Monty Python.
Yes, I am indeed.
Right. Okay.
But I live in an apartment on the second floor and I can't justify owning.
No.
In a very built up area. I mean, there are literally no trees for me to chop down. If I left my apartment block wielding a chainsaw, the police would be called immediately.
I think. You can imagine that somebody in your home, if you brought a rope and a chainsaw, might have one or two questions to ask. So, yeah. Are they expensive?
Oh, God. I didn't check that. I'd say they are. I mean, probably a couple of €100. I mean, you don't want to skimp on a chainsaw. You want to get one that is a reliable one. And we'll get to the statistics with regard to injury later, Sean. But as you say, it does very much predate the 20th century. It was invented as an instrument for facilitating childbirth. Two Scottish surgeons.
Whoa. Roll back the bus there. Did you say facilitating childbirth?
Yeah. Bear with me for a moment because it'll make sense, but excruciating sense in a moment.
Right. Okay.
1780, two Scottish surgeons by the name of John Aitken and James Jeffrey, they wanted to speed up a process. At that time, the C-section did exist, but it was very, very rare. And with C-sections, the mother never survived.
Yeah.
It was only to save the baby's life. They were very, very rare. People didn't do them. So if the baby was coming down in the breech position, then the surgeon would take a knife to the pelvic bone to make way for the child to be delivered. But it took a long time. Sorry, I'm just looking at your face now. It's dawning pain on your face. It took a long time. And also, of course, this is pre-anesthesia. So it was very, very painful.
Sweet Jesus.
Yeah. So these two surgeons had the idea, is there some way that we can speed up this process? And they invented the world's first chainsaw. How do I describe this, Sean? I did tweet a picture earlier. It looks like maybe the size of a roast beef carving knife, something similar to that sort of size. It has an oval chain link on it with very small, tiny, sharp teeth. And this is obviously pre-motorization. It is hand cranked.
Right.
It's like an old school whisk for whisking cream. And this is to perform a symphysiotomy, which is something that I've never heard before. I've heard of an episiotomy, but not a symphysiotomy. This is where part of the pelvic bone will be cut and the cartilage surrounding it in order to make way for a breech baby or a particularly large baby or perhaps if you're having twins or something like that. I'm not sure. I'm not a medic. But this is what they used, this what they called a chain saw because the teeth were on this chain.
Sure.
And it sped up the process. Now, it was obviously very, very painful.
Kill the mother.
But at least it took, it was quicker than the previous way of doing it, which was with a sharp knife. It was successful. And this was used for symphysiotomies throughout the late 18th and throughout the 19th centuries before C-sections became safer to undertake. If a baby had to be delivered in that way.
Yeah, that is the most terrifying. I didn't expect that to start at that point.
I know. It's really shocking because we associate chainsaws with two things. It is probably first with a pair of urbanites like ourselves, Sean. We think of horror movies and as an instrument of torture. But it's also, of course, an important tool in the logging industry.
Does some surgeon go, hang on, not just cutting pelvises in half, I could chop down a tree with this as well. Can I borrow this?
I'm going to bring this home and cut down the Christmas tree. So eventually it evolved into a woodworking tool. Now I'm thinking of Chevy Chase in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation when he brings the chainsaw out to cut down the Christmas tree. Everything changes, I suppose, in the early 20th century, Sean. This is where the story gets interesting in the sense that it takes on the role that we understand it to have now. And this is a German man, a very famous brand now of power tools, but there's a man behind the name, and that is Andreas Stihl, S-T-I-H-L, a very, very a giant of the power tool world. He is fondly remembered as the father of the chainsaw.
Okay.
We always have a father of these inventions, Sean. It's always inevitable.
But no mother in this case. She's had her pelvis sawn in half. Yes.
Yes, indeed. He was a mechanical engineer and he was actually working as a consultant in a sawmills in Germany pre-Second World War, 1920s. And he had an epiphany one day, and his epiphany was, this is a famous quotation attributed to Andreas Stihl. He said, "The saw must go to the tree, not the tree to the saw." Like Moses in front of the Red Sea. So the idea was that these loggers were dragging the trees to the sawmill, and it was all very laborious and heavy lifting and inefficient business model. So he wanted to create a much smaller saw, mechanical saw, that you were able to maybe use with one or two people. So in 1927, he launched the world's first motorized chainsaw. This was electric, which is interesting. We come across that a lot on this slot, where inventions which are very common now actually started with electricity, because electric motors were very popular in the turn of the century, before the combustion engine. But it was a 4-horsepower machine, and it needed to be used by two people. Let me describe this to you. Again, it's quite a terrifying looking machine. It was very, very heavy. It was 46 kilograms in weight. So that's far too heavy for a single person to lift. This isn't something that you are, you know, taking down from the top shelf in the shed. It was quite long. The main part of it, it looked like the handlebars of a bicycle. Kind of that chevron shape. And the primary logger held on to that part. And then at the other side, the secondary logger held on to a handle on that side. And this first steel chainsaw was only used for what you call in the industry, I suppose, trimming and jointing. So it wasn't for actually felling a tree. 3 years later, in 1929, he invented the first felling chainsaw. Again, that was a two-person operation, but it was powered by petrol, and that made it considerably more powerful, and it was actually able to fell a tree on its own, which was an incredible breakthrough.
Right, okay. And I suppose that's kind of a revolutionary thing then. But I suppose that it was still a two-person job. That must have made it tricky to do.
It was a two-person job. Everything changed when aluminium was invented in the post-war period, Sean. This made things lighter. By the end of the 1950s, we've got one-man chainsaws, about 12 kilograms in weight. which is still very heavy when you consider that chainsaws nowadays tend to be around 4 or 5 kilograms, I understand, in weight. So it took a long time for it to become something that was popularly used even in the logging industry, let alone suburbanites getting them to beef up their masculine image or what have you, because literally the materials were just too heavy.
Yeah, and now what was Leatherface?
Leatherface will be familiar to listeners who have watched the 1974 classic, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I always thought that he was responsible for making the chainsaw what it is, this terrifying instrument of torture in the popular imagination. But we actually have someone else to thank, the late, great Wes Craven, who made a lot of famous slasher movies in the 70s, 80s and 90s. He had a little known now movie called The Last House on the Left, which he released in 1972. And that was one of the first ever of many, many subsequent movies that have used the chainsaw as an instrument of torture. And I was watching the trailer for that just before it came in. Very, very famous trailer, because in the trailer it said, to avoid fainting, remember to repeat yourself during the movie, it's only a movie.
You can't buy that kind of publicity.
No, I mean, that's genius. Was just a brilliant PR move, wasn't it?
Yeah. Now, but chainsaws are dangerous. Are there figures on, like, injuries or fatalities even?
For sure, yeah. Well, there's 36,000 chainsaw injuries in the US alone each year. Now, most people who are using chainsaws, most people in general, are right-handed, Sean.
Mm.
So that means, you can imagine, the most vulnerable part of the body and the parts of the body that are presented in A&E rooms around the world each year as a result of chainsaw accidents are the left leg and the left arm.
Yeah.
They are very, very vulnerable, because the biggest cause of chainsaw accidents isn't actually necessarily having a finger cut off or something. It's about kickback. So when the chain hits something hard or hits something that's going against the grain, you get a really big kickback, like if you were to operate a shotgun or a rifle. Now, in Ireland, we do have some figures. The latest figures I could find were from 2015. And we know that in that year, in this country, there were 120 serious injuries from chainsaws, which is quite a lot, really, when you think about it. I mean, they really are very, very dangerous, and they require proper training to use them.
Because I suppose maybe that might be a lot of people, because that kickback thing. Now, I do have a circular saw, and that kicks back as well sometimes. You just have to position yourself in such a way that if it does, your leg isn't beside it. Now,
what
it has
are
a guard.
You using that for, Sean?
But that's to cut wood and things like
okay.
that. But and it has a guard that will come down. But you could
I know
actually,
the one you're talking
but
about.
But you could slice through your leg quite easily.
So you have
to make sure you're not in the line of fire if that happens.
And you, of course, you need to wear the glasses and everything.
Yes. Bill says, do people really own chainsaws? I thought I had passed all of the adult milestones, but apparently not. Someone else says, I can confirm that my local DIY store, which shall remain nameless, chainsaws can range from 119 to 289.
Oh, so less than I expected.
They're affordable then. My sister is a horticulturalist, so has her chainsaw license. She goes nuts when people don't have the correct gear and training. You can't rent a chainsaw, says another texter. Too dangerous, apparently. Someone else says, my uncle says having a chainsaw ticking away under the bed at night is a great way to combat any would-be burglars. Not a great way to get a good night's sleep, I would have thought either. Kieran says, I work for a tree surgeon company, but not on the ground or in the trees. Having seen the skill the guys I work with have with a chainsaw, along with all the protective gear, there's a lot, and all their qualifications, I reasserted my decision never to own or operate a chainsaw. So, yeah, there is actual
Well, I'm really
training
interested
you can do for that.
In your texture there saying that they have a chainsaw license.
Yeah.
So do you need a chainsaw license in this country to legally operate one? I'd like to know that.
Yeah, I'd like to know that too. Makes sense, actually, though. And at the start of this, Simon did say that actually he has dreamed of owning one. Stephen says, Simon's dream is to have a chainsaw. It's not exactly Martin Luther King, is it? Well, no, he will use the chainsaw to combat racism in all its many forms. Simon, thanks a million for coming into us. Simon Tierney there. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief on News Talk.